Habitation in Space and on Earth, class number 4 in the Worldwide Philosophy class series titled What Life Is and What Life Is For, originally written and presented by Z. Charnot, March the 23rd, 1988. It was presented as a speech and transcribed. Honorable Minister, Honored Deputy Minister, Assistant Deputy Ministers, and Distinguished Senior Management of the Ministry of Government Services, I will be mingling biographical data with the body of my message. In 1965 and 1966, I served Boeing as a consultant. My work related to the Manned Orbiting Laboratory. We had to support human life in space. I worked with Raleigh LaPelle on the large vacuum chambers. I worked with Dr. Graves on human physiology. I had been working for the University of Oregon Medical School for some while, for Dr. Paul Van Driel, in environmental medicine in particular. Space is a hostile environment for human habitation. There's a natural sequence of priorities in supporting human life. How long can you live with an environmental factor which must either be included because it is essential or excluded because it is lethal? Some factors are common to all. Some are particular. They may relate to a single astronaut. And figure 1 shows an alloy diagram, including all or some, or excluding all or some, vitamins, minerals, and allergens, etc. That's figure 1. The unshielded radiant energy of the sun must be excluded for all. Ultraviolet B radiation is dangerous. At certain intensities, even seconds of exposure are too long. Some are more susceptible or sensitive than others to this radiant energy. The supply of oxygen must be included for all. We had oxygen on board for rockets. There is a finite supply. There is no capacity for a mission that may take too long when you are carrying the oxygen in tanks. Our human ability to be without an oxygen supply is a matter of minutes. With that statement, perhaps we all need to take a deep breath. Water is an essential for all. We could obtain water from the fuel cells. The fuel cells released electricity with the combining of hydrogen and oxygen to give water, H2O. We need at least 2 liters of water per person per day. The required access of the human species to water is a matter of hours. About 72 hours is the lethal limit of doing without water. Shall we take a drink of water with that statement? Food is another universal essential. We live without food for about 65 days. There are 5 classes of essential food substances: proteins, carbohydrates, vitamins, minerals, and fats. We need some of each. We require, on average, 1,600 calories a day for sedentary existence. Sedentary existence means we just sit here and don't think too much. The United Nations has set a threshold of 2,354 calories per day as the average intake. But some people can consume as few as 600 calories per day and still put on weight. Some can consume as much as 3,500 calories per day and still not put on weight. This is because some of us are very efficient metabolizers. So, if anyone ever criticizes any of us who are overweight, we can rightly say that we are either efficient metabolizers or we eat too much. perhaps we need to appeal to the ambiguity. You slender, agile, and athletic types may just be inefficient metabolizers. On the other hand, you might simply be more controlled about your intake. Back to human life in space. The human being also has ablatives and excrements. What do you do with whiskers? Grow a beard? What do you do with perspiration? Dare you use deodorants or antiperspirants? How about fingernails or hair? Perhaps tears if events are tough? More immediately, how about the carbon dioxide and water vapor we exhale every moment? We spall off skin. How do you take a shower or a bath with weightlessness? What about fetish for brushing our teeth or using mouthwash? In space, all these things matter enormously. But perhaps, strangely, we are not now at a point where it also matters on Earth. The answers to all of these questions, for me, came from an awareness that human life is dependent upon other life forms. And people are dependent upon one another, both with respect to what they must do and what they must not do. There is included and essential human behavior. There is excluded and harmful, dangerous, threatening, and perhaps lethal human behavior. We can use the same diagram to plot the array of human behavior. And figure 2 shows an alloy diagram of sorts. At the top it says all, at the bottom it says some, to the left it says included, and to the right it says excluded. Exercise is an essential for all, but conflict must be minimized or eliminated. Combat must be excluded, even in sport. They are dependent upon one another. There are functions each member of the crew can perform. They must be watchful and caring about one another. Don't leave wrenches floating in the occupied space. Some of you may have noticed that I haven't yet listed the human excrements which easily come to mind. Those excrements most common. You know what I mean, but this is just after lunch. I want to point out that you don't want it floating in the air, and you dare not jettison it to risk mingling it with the hardware. So you store it, or you process it. By this time, you're getting a clearer picture of my perspective on human habitation. You may be anticipating my points about what we put in the air and what we put in our water and food. You may be anticipating my points about human dependency upon other life forms and upon one another, but I'll get to that later. I started my career as an architect. I took the 44 hours of architectural examinations in the state of Washington in 1956, but I found people only wanted the most familiar, traditional form of buildings or the lowest cost buildings, not the most functional or effective. So after 5.5 years in architecture, I went back to school to study physics. I founded a laboratory in 1962 that served Boeing in the areas I have described. My closest assistant was Dr. Eugene Kovalenko, formerly of General Dynamics. On my staff, I had Cliff Green, the Harvard mathematician, Julian Hayden from MIT, a physicist, who did his doctoral work on the integration of quantum mechanics and relativity. I left the United States in 1969. I received a grant of $40,000 U.S. funds as a fellowship from the Stoner Research Fund. This support was extended by a Swedish fellowship from Mankiewicz in Bonhagen. I worked on the use of sound in diagnostics. I spent subsequent 11 years in Europe.